that's what I think about when I think about the ways in which this case has, you know, impacted or broken me.
And Carrie, in the last 30 seconds we have, speaking of impactful moments, when he says goodbye over the phone to his own son, Izzy.
Yes, that is, I mean, that is such a rare moment to be able to capture on film, and obviously such a raw moment. But I think it really makes the viewer think about the sort of circles of loss and trauma that come with every death row case and every execution, because, you know, there's no happy outcomes in this case, in this story, in this film.
Carrie Blankinger, we thank you for being involved with, for producing this film, investigative journalist, reporter at the LA Times. Her reporting on John Ramirez led to her work with the director, Smitri Mundra, on the new short documentary everyone should see called I Am Ready, Warden, now streaming on Paramount Plus, author of the memoir Corrections and Ink, a memoir. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting lightly.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, going now until December 31st.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-the-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the teacher strike in Albany enters its third week, St. Helens School District appoints its interim superintendent, and Governor Kotek calls for a special session to bail out the Oregon Department of Forestry. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 26th. 2024. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. On November 12th, about 600 teachers and educational staff in Albany walked out of class, prompting the first teacher strike in the district in nearly 40 years. As of today, the Greater Albany Educators Association continues to rally into their third week of the strike. The union and the school district could not reach a deal after 9 months of bargaining. In late October, 92% of teachers voted to authorize the strike. Salary was not the main issue in the negotiations. Instead, teachers are demanding smaller class sizes and more safety measures to improve student behavioral issues. The union wanted to start new 90-minute prep times in February, but the district says they need to wait until next school year to avoid schedule disruptions. As of 1 a.m. on Friday, the union said they reached a tentative agreement with the district. In a letter from the union, they say the extra prep time will be added to the high school schedules in the fall of 2025. They also say they reached agreements on professional development, health, and safety policies. While these agreements are signs of the strike coming to an end, the union has demanded the school board to resign. It said that a teacher came forward accusing the district of pressuring parents to reduce their students' individual education plans and hold, quote, illegal secret meetings to discuss the changes without the teachers. Amid the negotiations, the school district said they are ending health insurance and benefits on December 1st for striking teachers. District officials say they need to provide insurance only to active employees. Since the teachers on strike are not actively at work, they can revoke those benefits. The Oregon Education Association, the statewide parents union of the Greater Albany Educators Association, expressed commitment to cover the costs of COBRA insurance plans for each striking teacher. The St. Helens School Board voted unanimously to appoint Steve Webb as the acting superintendent last night. Following the arrest of two high school teachers and an investigation of a middle school teacher for sexual abuse against students, the St. Helens School District has left the community deeply concerned and enraged. The board placed Superintendent Scott Stockwell and high school principal Katie Wagner on paid administrative leave for failing to report the allegations. On Friday, Governor Kotek announced she would appoint a superintendent if the board failed to do so in 14 days. Steve Webb was hired on to the St. Helens School Board for a 90-day contract, effective immediately. He served as superintendent of Vancouver Public Schools from 2008 to 2021. He retired early from the district as part of a retirement and release agreement in 2021. The district never announced a reason for their decision to force him into early retirement. The Oregon Department of Forestry approached the state treasury for a $60 million loan last month following one of the costliest wildfire seasons the state had ever seen. Treasury officials said no. Cora Parker, the treasury finance director, told the state agency in an email, quote, "Your request to borrow funds is denied due to inability to demonstrate repayment without additional legislative action," end quote. She explained that the lawmakers who take office in January are not bound by anything the current legislators promise. She also said collateral for the loan was not sufficient to protect taxpayers' dollars. But the ODF seeks a bailout from the legislature's Joint Emergency Board. Usually the board approves emergency spending between sessions, but it doesn't have enough money to cover the costs. Governor Kotek announced today that there will be a brief special session on December 12th to send $218 million to state agencies grappling with wildfire costs. Lawmakers are already due for interim committee hearings December 10th, but special sessions can be tricky. Unlike normal sessions, there aren't guardrails requiring lawmakers to adjourn at any specific point. They can lead to Democrats using their majorities to bring forward bills Republicans opposed. Republicans have agreed to this special session as long as it stops at addressing the wildfire bills. The 6 months regular session starts this coming January. California lost three times as much acreage to wildfire this year as last, and low-income Latino communities often suffer most. So the Hispanic Access Foundation is spreading the word about its wildfire management toolkit. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Low-income Latino communities often bear the brunt of wildfires, so Hispanic Access Foundation offers a wildfire management toolkit and video series to help families and policymakers prepare. So far this year, more than 1 million acres have burned in wildland fires in California. That's more than three times what we lost in 2023. Hilda Berganza is the foundation's climate manager. She says Latinos who work outside in agriculture or construction are at high risk from the smoke.
When there's a wildfire near, they don't stop working because they're not allowed to or because they don't know. Lung cancer, asthma rates are going up from the wildfire smokes and different air pollutants.
Latinos are also less likely than their white neighbors to have home or renter's insurance, so losses hit harder. They are less likely to have a car to make a quick escape and may not be able to afford a hotel in case of an evacuation. For more information, search Wildfire Toolkit at HispanicAccess.org. Berganza says agencies should partner with trusted local community groups and Spanish language radio stations to make sure the language barrier doesn't delay crucial information.
For example, the Red Cross has an application on the phones where they're sending out alerts. And while that is a good thing to use technology, a lot of Latinos actually don't have access to internet and or don't have smartphones because they're more expensive.
The toolkit authors encourage lawmakers to fully fund programs that allow low-income communities to reduce wildfire risk and programs that help families recover after a natural disaster. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Today is the last day Oregonians can cure or correct their ballots if it was flagged for something like a signature mistake. These final votes are critical in determining the race for House District 22 in Marion County. It's still too close to call, even 3 weeks after the election. Democrat Leslie Munoz leads incumbent Republican Tracy Kramer by just 149 votes. The Marion County clerk told KGW that the district listed 500 ballots as, quote, unaccepted. He said more than 3,000 ballots required signature verification before they could be counted. If Munoz wins, the Democrats could have a supermajority or three-fifths majority in the state house. This has been the requirement to pass specialized taxes in Oregon since 2005. The Oregon Senate already has a Democrat supermajority. There will be an automatic recount for District 22 if 40 votes or fewer separate the results. If a candidate requests a recount, that campaign has to pay for it. Oregonians should know the outcome of the race by December 2nd at the latest, which is the deadline for certifying results. After a pandemic-induced decline, pertussis is again on the rise in Tennessee and nationwide. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report that the United States is returning to pre-pandemic levels, with more than 10,000 cases typically reported annually. Danielle Smith reports.
Whooping cough or pertussis is making a comeback, and a Tennessee medical expert stresses that this preventable, highly contagious bacterial infection requires urgent attention. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that year-to-date, Tennessee has recorded more than 200 cases, while more than 25,000 cases have been reported nationwide. Dr. Anthony Flores with Monroe Correll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt University Medical Center says rising cases are largely due to vaccine hesitancy, and taking action now is essential to combat this serious illness.
I think of our severe cases that we're seeing here in Tennessee and nationwide as well, almost all of those severe hospitalized cases are in unvaccinated children. And so I think the lower vaccination rate, kind of the periodicity with which we see whooping cough come back in surges, are contributing to the current numbers we're seeing.
Flores says typical symptoms include a runny nose and low-grade fever. Although fever is less prominent, the cough can develop and persist for weeks, becoming particularly bothersome in older children and adults. The name whooping cough comes from the severe coughing fit that causes difficulty breathing, followed by a whoop sound as the afflicted person gasps for air. Flores explains that in newborns, especially before they begin receiving their initial vaccinations at 2, 4, and 6 months, their protection relies solely on the antibodies passed to them by their mother during pregnancy.
In pregnant women, it's actually recommended that they, if they haven't received a booster, that they receive a booster in their third trimester. And that's, again, to pass on those antibodies to the newborn baby that then can protect them from severe disease.
Flores recommends children receive the whooping cough vaccine as part of their routine immunization. He adds, as they grow, they get booster shots, and adults receive a different formulation called Tdap every 10 years to maintain immunity. He adds it's important to follow this schedule to prevent waning immunity over time. I'm Danielle Smith, Tennessee News Service.
The special counsel wants to drop the January 6 charges against President-elect Trump. U.S. officials hint at a ceasefire in Lebanon. And Trump's pick for border czar warns states that are promising to fight strict immigration policies. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy historic times.
This is off of the worry list for Donald Trump, unless there's some strange situation where they would try to refile. I think that would be very unlikely at the end of the presidential term.
Loyola Marymount law professor Jessica Levinson says President-elect Donald Trump has one less criminal case to worry about. On Monday, special counsel Jack Smith moved to drop federal election subversion charges, citing the Justice Department's policy against prosecuting a sitting president. If approved by a federal judge, Trump would no longer face four felony counts for his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. U.S. officials say a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon is close, but State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller says it's not done yet, especially given how their parallel work for a hostage release Gaza deal has been repeatedly frustrated.
Many times when we thought we were going to be getting to yes, in both cases, and for various reasons, the parties didn't get there. Nothing's final until everything is final.
Democratic Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth says Trump's pick, former Fox News host and Iraq and Afghanistan vet Pete Hegseth, is unfit to run the Pentagon.
We're talking about an organization that is 3 million servicemen and women and civilians and a budget of over $900 billion. He does not have the experience to run an organization of that size.
Trump's chosen border czar, Tom Homan, tells Fox News nearly all of the migrants seeking asylum don't qualify.
Right now, 9 out of 10 people who claim asylum at our border will end up with an order of removal because they simply don't qualify for asylum.
Homan says the administration will cut federal funding to states that refuse to cooperate with strict border policies. Officials in California, Illinois, Arizona, and New Mexico have pledged to push back against mass deportation plans. Accepting a National Press Club honor, Axios CEO Jim VandeHei gave a strong defense of independent journalism and a harsh criticism to X's owner and Trump ally Elon Musk.
Everything we do is under fire. Elon Musk sits on Twitter every day or X today saying, like, we are the media. You are the media. My message to Elon Musk is bullshit. You're not the media.
Members of the LGBTQ plus community are bracing for what a second Trump presidency could mean for their safety and rights. The Trevor Project's Zach Eisenstein says following Election Day, they saw a 700% increase in calls, texts, and chats. But he says the community is resilient.
Throughout our history, our community has had to fight for our rights, and we will continue to do so just as we always have.
Eisenstein says they've developed a new guide to help folks navigate the challenging times. It stresses taking time to disconnect and prioritize mental health, along with finding community and getting involved in local organizations. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to an end-of-the-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during the program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for News in Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's Coast Range Radio. Then at 8, Reggae Bobcast. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a few showers and a low of 43 degrees. And tomorrow the weather is cloudy and cold with a high of 47 degrees. Today in history, the first Polaroid camera sells in 1948. It was originally known as the Land camera and was invented by Edwin H. Land. It sold for $89.75, or almost $1,200 in 2024. The quote of the day is from Cheyenne and Arapaho author Tommy Orange in his debut novel, They're There. He says, quote, "Kids are jumping out of the window of burning buildings, falling to their deaths, and we think the problem is that they're jumping," end quote. A frozen whale is beached on the mudflats near Anchorage, Alaska. In Oregon, a coastal piece of the Tsleil-Waututh tribe's ancestral territory has been recently restored, and hopes run high that Congress will pass a bill that would help Native Americans get home mortgages. With those stories and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A frozen whale is beached on the mudflats near Anchorage. The unusual sight draws hundreds of people every day to see and experience it firsthand. Scientists have identified it as a rare fin whale. After researchers took samples to find out what caused the whale's death, they left nature to do its work. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, some are hoping to salvage parts of the whale before the tides take it back out to sea.
For the ocean to reclaim the whale, it will take high tides at their peak to move it off the mudflats. NOAA's Alaska Whale Stranding Coordinator Mandy Keough says this will probably happen sometime in mid-December.
For the general public to be able to go out and see this large whale is an opportunity that they probably won't get again.
Keough says fin whales are listed as an endangered species, and it's rare to see them in Upper Cook Inlet. This one was a young female and already quite big.
It's a 47-foot whale, you know, and these fin whales grow to be well over 70 feet, so this is actually a fairly young animal.
Keough says NOAA has had a lot of questions about whether parts of the whale can be salvaged. She says rules regulating that come under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which allows Alaska natives to harvest the meat and whale parts because of their long tradition of using them for food as well as for their arts and crafts.
No one else can collect any marine mammal parts. So we really need people to leave the animal alone, or if there are Alaska natives in the area that are salvaging parts, to give them space so that they can do it safely.
There was tons of people walking out there on the ice, and it was just real powerful to be in her presence for a few minutes.
Michael Livingston is Unangah from the Alaska Peninsula. He says the whale is a gift.
How graceful she is, even in her passing, to see her fluke, to see her tail, and how large it was and how powerful it was and muscular. It was just really inspiring to be that close to a whale.
Livingston says there's a group of people organizing a blessing for the whale. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
In Oregon, a coastal piece of the Tsleil tribe's ancestral territory has been recently restored, nearly 170 years after Congress created the reservation's boundaries. 27 acres of Cape Foulweather on the Oregon coast have been reacquired by the Confederated Tribes of Tsleil Indians. The tribe purchased the land from the Mackenzie River Trust last month with a $2 million grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
It really is an amazing opportunity for us to become stewards again.
Angela Sondana is director of the tribe's Natural Resources Department. She hopes to reintroduce cultural burning to the coastal prairie section to rejuvenate its ecosystem.
Cape Foulweather is an incredibly diverse and sensitive ecological area. It's been a cultural gathering site for millennia, and it will provide direct opportunity for tribal members to gather and resume subsistence harvest in the rocky coastline there.
The Tsleil Reservation was established in 1855 by Congress and President Franklin Pierce. It was further diminished through land cessions. And hopes run high that Congress will pass a bill that would help Native Americans get home mortgages. Dakota News Now reports that Senate Bill 1941 would permanently fund the USDA's Native Community Development Financial Institution Lending Program. While some proponents, like U.S. Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota, say they're confident the bill will pass with bipartisan support, others point out that the bill was introduced in June of 2023 and has been stuck in a Senate committee since March of this year. Just 38% of Native Americans own a home in South Dakota. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
Sensing Sasquatch is a new exhibit at the High Desert Museum in Bend, and it's centering on Indigenous voices. Five Indigenous artists will be displaying their work that explores the cultural significance of the elusive character. Depictions of Sasquatch, or Bigfoot, are specifically associated with the Pacific Northwest, often shown as a cartoonish or commercialized icon. But the history of Sasquatch, originally Sasquets in the language of the Coast Salish First Nation peoples, is far deeper than the pop culture icon Americans have grown accustomed to. Sasquatch serves as a protective identity, a sentient elder, and a spiritual guide for many tribes across North America, not just in the Pacific Northwest. Though Sasquatch is usually depicted in the lush rainforests of Oregon and Washington, its habitat extends into the high desert region and across the United States. Another popular view is that Sasquatch is shy and hides from humans, but Philip Cash Cash, one of the artists featured in the exhibit, shares a different presentation. As a fluent Nez Perce speaker, he works on cultural advocacy, identity, and communication projects. In his Bigfoot Rattle, made of cottonwood, Cash Cash depicts Sasquatch as a conscious being with the agency to communicate with humans. Pollyanna Cougar Tracks DeCocteau Little Bull's sculpture in the exhibit represents Sasquatch as a protective figure, encouraging values like environmental and cultural protection. Visitors are asked to leave their stereotypes and popular representations at the door by leaving stickers outside the exhibition. The exhibit runs until January 12, 2025. The Higher Education Coordinating Commission has announced the latest round of Workforce Ready grants has been awarded across the state. The money can be used for underserved groups who are pursuing well-paying jobs in healthcare, manufacturing, and technology. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
The latest round of Workforce Ready grants means $42 million is being divided among 62 projects aiming to foster Oregon's diverse workforce in the fields of healthcare, manufacturing, and technology. The grants are part of Future Ready Oregon, a $200 million initiative launched by the Oregon Legislature in 2022 to enhance workforce training. Funds can be used to address barriers to education and employment, support curriculum development, and purchase equipment. Future Ready Oregon Director Jennifer Purcell says partnerships with employers, industry leaders, and labor organizations are key to the program's success.
It's relying on those partnerships and the expertise and lived experience of those community-based organizations that allows for this funding to be used to meet the needs of individuals in really responsive ways.
Grantees for this round include Adelante Mujeres, Klamath Union High School, Project Youth, and Eastern Oregon University. Purcell says grant money doesn't only fund training and education programs. It also helps people stay focused on school and work by helping them cover essential needs like childcare, housing, or transportation.
In some parts of the state, that looks like providing bus passes. We have an organization that even purchased refurbished bicycles.
Future Ready Oregon has focused the funding on 10 priority underserved populations, including veterans, people of color, and rural communities. Purcell says the Afghan Support Network, for example, received a grant to prepare Afghan refugees to earn certifications so they can fill high-demand jobs in Oregon's tech sector.
This training will also provide culturally responsive supports and career coaching, as well as vocational English classes.
This was the third and final round of the Workforce Ready grants. Purcell says Future Ready Oregon has learned a lot from the process that will help inform state funding strategies in the future. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Programs that provide direct cash to families could benefit more people, a new report says. The Working Families Tax Credit, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF, and Guaranteed Basic Income are examples of direct cash programs. With more on the story, it's Eric Tegedoff.
Support for programs that provide direct cash would benefit families in need in Washington State, a new report says. About one in four Washingtonians struggle to meet their basic needs because of low income. The Washington State Budget and Policy Center analyzed two programs currently implemented in the state, the Working Families Tax Credit and Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, and Guaranteed Basic Income, which is being piloted in some parts of the state. Lila Reynolds with the organization co-authored a report that lays out principles that would ensure these programs benefit the most people possible.
Those principles include making sure that cash programs are targeted to people who most need it, that that cash is recurring so that people can depend on it, so usually monthly, that it's unrestricted so that families can use it in whatever way they need.
The Working Families Tax Credit provides rebates up to $1,255 to low and middle income families. The Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF program, is a federal benefit administered by the state. The Growing Resilience in Tacoma program is one example of a guaranteed basic income program in the state. It received nearly $2 million from the state legislature in 2023. Reynolds says restrictions are holding these programs back, such as a 60-month limit for TANF and age restrictions on the Working Families Tax Credit that keep young adults from benefiting. She says the public benefit system addresses secondary needs like housing and food assistance, but doesn't target the core issue of poverty, which is a lack of cash that can be used as needed by recipients.
Research has shown that overwhelmingly, recipients of cash transfer programs use that money for essential needs like food, financial emergencies, things like that. So we know that these programs work
and we just want to make sure that they're expanded.
Reynolds also notes that direct cash programs have ripple effects that benefit society.
You see health impacts. There's been research that shows increase in brain activity in babies, improved maternal health outcomes, improved educational outcomes, reducing recidivism, improving employment outcomes.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to an end-of-the-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Eliza Yurkov. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Isabel Charlet, Brian Bull, Alex Gonzalez, Danielle Smith, and Suzanne Potter. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. We've explored fire policy and politics more than almost any other topic on this show, and for good reason.